Hey, what's up, everybody? My name is David E.J. Berger. You can find me at Carl Jr. on Twitter. And you are now listening to Training Camp Dialed In. I'm bringing you the best of the day's news from the 2019 NFL training camps. And most days, not all days, but most days, I'll be featuring phone calls with writers and reporters from the actual sidelines of camp. There's a reason there's a Phone in the Pod logo, folks. I'll be getting their first-hand accounts of the action from a fantasy perspective. This is the place to be all August long, as I'll be bringing you 3 to 4 shows per week filled with fantasy football knowledge that's going to help you win your leagues this season. So you need to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or Podbean. This is season 2, people. We did this all last August. We're doing it all this August. So stick around. Let's have some fun. And we are back, presented, as always, by Dynasty Happy Hour. You need to be subscribed all year long, but this is the time of year you need to be listening to all the pods on the feed. So give them a follow at DynastyHHPod for updates on all the new episodes. And it's been a minute since I've dropped a new episode. Have you missed me? Probably not. But if you are a recurring listener, you're definitely missing out on your routine dose of training camp info and insights by the people who are actually there. So guess what? I'm cutting right to it, and there's no better day to do so. Not only are we talking about the Los Angeles Rams, the favorite team of yours truly, go Rams, but we have one of the best sports writers in the game. If this was a sports writing cipher, this guy would be dropping bars. I'm talking about Joe Curley. He covers the Rams for the Ventura County Star. Not only that, he's a sports reporter for the USA Today Network, so you can find his work all across the country. But today, he's going to be piping in your earbuds, car stereos, Bluetooth speakers, however you like to listen, but probably one of those three. You can find him at VCS Joe Curley on Twitter. Get ready for some hardcore Todd Gurley and Daryl Henderson content. What are we waiting for? Let's bring him on. Ladies and gentlemen, Joe Curley.
Hello.
Hello, Joe.
Let's do it. What the heck?
All right. Well, this is my favorite. I'm LA based. This is my favorite team. It's also one that's exciting for fantasy, so let's hop right in.
Yeah, one of the best ones, for sure.
All right, well, since the arrival of head coach Sean McVay, this Rams offense has been dominating the NFL in real life and the make-believe gridiron for fantasy owners. In 2018, the Rams were the second-best NFL offense in both points and total yards with over 6,700. Not only that, they used the fourth most amount of plays to accomplish this. In fantasy, we are taught to chase volume, and that was a lot of it in all the right categories. I'm sure McVay and passing game coordinator slash quarterback coach Shane Waldron are not tinkering too much with a good thing, but now the league has a healthy amount of tape on it. So from what you've seen at camp, what have they been incubating on the practice field in terms of scheme and formations that's going to bring nuance to this offense, that's going to keep this team high-powered once again this season?
Well, I think this is kind of the number one story of the offseason beyond, you know, there's been a lot of talk, obviously, about Todd Gurley's leg. There's been a lot of talk about Jared Goff's contract, obviously, talk about how they're going to respond to losing the Super Bowl in such kind of an ugly fashion. But really, the main question that I'm looking forward to this year is just kind of Sean McVay 2.0. You know, obviously, Coach McVay was able to kind of take the league by storm his first 2 years, you know, using 11 personnel more than anybody else by far, basically by an order of magnitude. And is this going to be an offense that is going to use 12 personnel a lot more, utilizing young tight end Gerald Everett? Or is it going to be, you know, an offense that, you know, maybe the Patriots gave them a little bit of a lesson in the Super Bowl when they had that, you know, the game-winning drive with 22 personnel, you know, using two backs? You know, are we going to see Todd Gurley with Daryl Henderson rather than, you know, as a straight replacement? So I think these are all, you know, options. These are all stuff that we're looking at. And I think these are all questions that Coach McVay is going to be answering himself kind of on a week-to-week basis as they game plan. I certainly expect them to use more 12 personnel, and I'm intrigued by the idea of, you know, having Gurley in the backfield and Daryl Henderson, you know, maybe split out or, you know, used in a variety of different ways, for sure.
So are they keeping things under wraps even for the media?
Well, I mean, there you have as much access as all the other teams. I mean, the camp was available for, all the fans were out there in Irvine, and, we see what they're running on Sundays, but, there's walkthroughs throughout the day in which they're, probably working on their game plan for, Carolina for week one and beyond that the media isn't kind of privy to. So, you definitely see a lot beyond 11 personnel, but this is still an offense that is going to run through Jared Goff to those three great receivers in a variety of different ways.
Yeah, I just know these guys have a great poker face, so they don't like to reveal too much. Quarterback Jared Goff has gone from punchline as a rookie to a couple off throws from being a Super Bowl champ. His evolution has also translated on-field success to online success for fantasy owners. He had more attempts, yards, and touchdowns in year three from year two, and with the increased volume, he actually produced a small 2% uptick in completion percentage to 64%. What kind of camp has Goff had, and can we expect any more production increase this year, or have we caught a glimpse of his ceiling with over 4,600 yards and 32 touchdowns last year?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you're in a position as a Goff owner to grab value. You know, he's somebody who, probably drafted as, the QB 11, 12, 13, somewhere in there. And he's certainly somebody who could reach the top five, if things continue to kind of evolve. But the big question to me in terms of Goff is, his offensive line is shifting, especially the second most important position on offense, which is center. John Sullivan is no longer with the team. Roger Saffold has moved on to Tennessee on a big money free agent deal. So you've got, basically two sophomores coming in. They joked that draft picks last year, Note Boom and the center on Brian Allen. Those two players are coming in after virtual redshirt years, and are going to play and are expected to play and produce. And center is a very important position, especially with a young quarterback. Where John Sullivan, basically was helping Goff kind of make the calls and adjustments and audibles and stuff like that. And so now you've got an even younger player at the center position. And so I think that is going to be kind of an area of growth for Goff as he kind of turns from being a younger player into, somebody who is an established NFL, kind of trustworthy player. And I think that's what we're going to see. This is where he's going to earn that $30 million contract coming up, extension coming up, where, he really, the offensive line has kind of really helped him kind of incubate as a quarterback in this league. And now, he's going to have to make some decisions on his own. He's going to have to make some adjustments on his own. He's going to have to improve, not in the physical aspect of the game, but the mental aspect.
So we have some question marks for Goff, but he should be set up under McVay to still have a lot of success.
I think it's cheap, too, from a fantasy football perspective. His ADP is low. His auction value is low. I think it's probably a smart thing to do to target one of those guys that's being drafted 11th, 12th, 13th as a quarterback. A lot of those guys can kind of have a big year and jump into the, top seven, top five. And, it's funny, you talk to a lot of Rams fans who believe that Goff is a top five quarterback, and this is his opportunity to kind of show that.
I was a big fan of his performance in the Saints playoff game last year.
Yeah, really tough circumstances on the road, made some big throws. The numbers, you look at them, don't look fantastic, but when you consider the situation, when you watch, there was a really good, maybe I shouldn't plug something, but there was a really good video. Peyton Manning on a major network has a show which they kind of break down the details about the game. And
talking about Peyton's detail?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, no, I watched that too.
If you watch
yeah.
that, he does a really good job of breaking down that performance and how it wasn't just a, your typical 200 and something yards with one touchdown performance. So, he really did a good job, in really difficult circumstances for sure.
That's a great watch. I agree, and he does do a great job. Well, let's move on to Goff's receiving core. Thanks to the success through the air in Los Angeles the last two seasons, wide receivers Robert Woods, Brandon Cooks, and even Eastern Washington's finest Cooper Kupp are household names for fantasy football. In 2018, the Rams used 11 personnel on 90% of its plays, as you've mentioned, a high volume. No other team even finished higher than 80%. So part of their success is a byproduct of simply being on the field a ton. But as we are now in August 2019, have you seen this trend continuing in camp? If not, who would be the odd man out?
Well, I mean, the big stat from a fantasy perspective is when Cooper went down, they were on pace to be the first team in over a decade to have three receivers go for 1,000 yards in the same season. And I think that's certainly a possibility in 2019. Kupp was out there in OTAs with a red jersey on, basically going through practice, you know, well before he was, cleared for contact. And, you know, he obviously has been himself during training camp. He took some wicked shots in the practices against the Chargers and Raiders and you know, got up and dusted himself off and kept playing and, you know, looked like the player that he was a year ago. So, you know, certainly those three guys, you know, their values are going to skyrocket in fantasy football. The way I look at it, you know, I've said this, you know, multiple times the last couple of years. I think, you know, Cooks is probably the best play for a standard league, you know, because he's somebody who's going to be in position to score touchdowns and, you know, get down the field and have big yardage games. Robert Woods, I think, is probably, you know, depending on the value where he picked, you know, the last couple of years he's been the best value where he hasn't been drafted pretty early, but he's somebody who could really give you big numbers both in a standard and a PPR. And I think Kupp is the guy who, you know, probably is the best value in terms, you know, even though that value is probably being whittled away this year. I haven't looked at, you know, ADPs yet, really. But, you know, I think Kupp, in terms of a volume circumstance, you know, in a PPR format, you know, he's somebody who still is going to return, you know, and be Jared Goff's, you know, kind of primary target on third downs. He's somebody who I think he was the leading guy. He led the team in touchdowns when he got hurt, you know, at the moment he got hurt, and was still well up there, you know, even though he only played, you know, basically half the season. So, you know, what I would say from a fantasy perspective is you kind of want the last one. You know, you don't want to be the one to pick the first one unless you're in a standard league and you're going to target Brandon Cooks, who, you know, I still really like. You know, I think Woods has been the guy the last couple of years to own. And I think this year it might be Kupp, because I think his value is probably going to be, you know, the cheap, or his cost is going to be the cheapest. And I think, you know, he might produce the most value.
And no fear with Kupp's health.
I don't think so. You know, I think, you know, typically an ACL injury, you know, there is the kind of trepidation where a player is back on the field within a year, but he's not really himself into year two. You know, but if you watch him, some of the clips from the joint practices with the Chargers on NFL Network and the Raiders, you know, he does look like himself. So there is a little bit of a gamble there in regards to, he's probably, especially in a keeper league, he's probably going to be better next year than this year. But, you know, he's still someone I think you would want to gamble on.
There's been a lot of buzz about wide receiver Josh Reynolds, but he's getting billed more as insurance if anything happens to the main three wide receivers. But could you see Reynolds making it onto the field without injury and thus making it into lineups for fantasy gamers?
Yeah, I think Reynolds is the guy you want to jump. You know, if you have a deeper bench, especially if you have one of those three guys, he might be kind of the rare receiver handcuff that you would want. But, you know, I don't see carrying just him unless you're in kind of a big, deep dynasty league. But he's somebody who, you know, the moment one of those three receivers get banged up, he's someone you got to jump on, because he can provide cover for all three of those positions. Certainly he played a lot more once Kupp went down last year. Certainly he can play, you know, especially Robert Woods's position. You know, I think that I kind of expected him to take off as like a red zone threat last year. One of the kind of the secret things that not a lot of people talk about, you know, the secret struggles of this offense the last couple of years, is they haven't been as good in the red zone as they've been kind of between the 20s, at least efficiency wise. And I think they're still kind of searching for kind of that red zone target. And when Kupp went down last year, I was really curious to see if kind of Reynolds would take off, or is that Gerald Everett? And I think that question still kind of exists. You know, can Josh Reynolds become kind of a red zone specific threat? Can Gerald Everett become kind of somebody they can, you can rely on the red zone and you know, maybe outperform his, you know, kind of efficiency, you know, by, or his, you know, his opportunity by being efficient in the red zone, I should say. So, you know, I think those are two guys that you really want to watch. You want to, if one of those three goes down, you want to be that, you know, the guy that goes and grabs Reynolds, you know, or if he begins to kind of get more opportunities in the red zone, he might be somebody who you could go get in a deeper league. But it's really, you know, three receivers in one offense, you know, is pretty deep. But to, you know, to expect kind of consistent production out of a fourth receiver in one offense is really, you know, kind of rare.
We got Reynolds out of the way. Now it's time to talk about the stuff that most listeners are probably tuning in for, which is some scorching hot John Kelly content. I'm just just kidding, although I do want to talk about him. But running back Todd Gurley has become so distrusted because of his knee issue that fantasy's best player the last two seasons has fallen into the second round of redraft leagues, and dynasty gamers are cashing out for anything resembling peak value. I'm sure you've been asked about this over and over and over and over and over and over. Well, I'm going to do it again, Joe. I'm sorry. But you're someone who is around this team day in and day out, so there's no one better to talk about it. What kind of season should fantasy gamers truly expect from Gurley this season?
Yeah, you know, I think this is, you know, a fluid situation. This is something where, you know, I've been asked this over and over again. I've probably given different answers depending on kind of where we are in the offseason. I was somebody who, during the playoffs last year, really believed that Todd Gurley was Todd Gurley. If you go and watch his film, you know, throughout the playoffs, you know, he looked like himself. It's just the opportunities were kind of less. Now you have to ask yourself why. You know, he was probably the key to the Super Bowl, and the fact that he wasn't used more in the Super Bowl was, you know, if not number one, certainly a key reason why they only scored 3 points in the Super Bowl. My kind of opinion on this change, the day before the Super Bowl, when Sean McVay said basically that Todd Gurley's 100% going to the Super Bowl, and then he only got, you know, what was it, 9 touches or 7 touches, whatever he got in the Super Bowl. And so that's when, you know, the alarm bells went off and you know, really, you know, the things really became troublesome for me about the situation. And the thing about it is, you know, he does look like himself when, you know, when he's practicing, when he's, you know, when he's playing, you know, like I said, in the playoffs last year, you know, so I think there's going to be a lot of, you know, kind of a plurality of people, or not a plurality of people, but certainly a minority of people that are going to say, hey, you know, if you actually watch the film, he looks like himself, maybe I can get him at a value. But the fact that, you know, you have to look at really what the team, not what the team says, but what the team has done. The team has matched Malcolm Brown's restricted free agent offer. The team has went out and spent a third round pick on arguably the most explosive running back in the draft class. And so they've, and, you know, John Kelly, still one of my favorite backs, you know, in that backfield. I mean, I think you've got all of a sudden this really deep backfield in a spot where, you know, you look at the last 2 years, Todd Gurley's playing 80% of the snaps. He's somebody that's so valuable, not just in the run game, but in the pass game, that they couldn't take him off the field to rest because they needed him in as a pass blocker. He went an entire season without allowing a sack as a pass protector. So, you know, I think certainly things are changing. Certainly, you know, I think the most the smart thing to do would to be to lower your expectation. Think that he's going to come down to about 60 to 65% of snaps rather than 80. You know, even before things kind of hit the fan last year, Malcolm Brown hurt his clavicle in December, he was getting a series in each of the halves. So they were already starting to kind of dial down Gurley's, you know, workload in the middle of last year before the injuries kind of really took their toll. So I would expect Malcolm Brown to still kind of get, you know, those series. I'm expecting Daryl Henderson to kind of be a new weapon for the offense, who can, you know, like I said earlier, can kind of play with another back, can also be in the back on his own and kind of spread that stuff out. That said, you know, I think Todd Gurley, you know, still going to have a value. If the value does drop into the second and third rounds, I think it's a really interesting idea, you know, to grab him, you know, and basically gamble your season on, you know, you'd be getting the number one player in fantasy for the last 2 years, you know, at a huge discount. So I think that's kind of, you know, that is super enticing, I think, especially if he kind of, you know, there was some stuff early in the offseason when things were really bad, that, you know, he was dipping into third and fourth and fifth rounds. If you were one of those owners, I think you really made out. You know, I just think you take maybe 15 to 20% off what he's been in terms of both price and production the last 2 years, and I think you live with it. You know, I also would totally understand if you're one of those owners that says, hey, you know, I'm not going to gamble my season on a big name that's probably going to go early second round or late first round. You know, I think that's totally valid. But, you know, if I'm in one of my leagues and he's dropping into the late second or early third, you know, then you would, you know, in that situation, I'd probably jump on that and then just make sure I get Henderson or Brown late. Malcolm Brown is basically going undrafted, and he's somebody who, if Todd Gurley's not playing, could be a pretty good fantasy asset, could really fill that hole. The real issue with, you know, as a fantasy owner in this situation is if Gurley all of a sudden on game day is declared out because of his knee or is out for an extended period of time, you just want to have that kind of old school fantasy football running back handcuff that, you know, kind of we don't see as much as we used to.
And that handcuff is probably going in this order: Malcolm Brown, Daryl Henderson, and then John Kelly.
Yeah, I think Malcolm Brown is the handcuff. He's somebody who, if Gurley is out, they just plug and play with Malcolm Brown because his, you know, kind of abilities kind of line up better. But I do think Daryl Henderson, you can look at him as somebody who's, you know, you can almost play him even if Gurley's healthy, because I think he's going to get, you know, he'll have kind of big play ability upside. He'll also have ability in the passing game. Like I said, I think they're going to play both those guys together at times. So I think there's going to be weeks this year where Todd Gurley can give you a good week and Daryl Henderson can give you a good week. And if you're in one of these leagues where people are biting on Henderson in like the sixth or seventh round, I think I prefer it. Like, you know, like in all these answers, it's all about value. If Henderson's off the board in like the fifth or sixth round, you don't want that. But if he falls into the seventh or eighth, maybe you grab him then as a handcuff and you don't worry about Brown. But if someone nabs him early, you know, then I'd be fine with falling back on Brown with my last pick.
You've already answered my next question, which was, does Henderson have standalone value? I think we got a glimpse of that in the preseason game in Hawaii when he caught that wheel route for a big gain. So right. We are drafting Henderson more than handcuffed upside. I like it. Okay.
Let me just add one more thing about that. He hasn't done much from a running perspective in preseason, but I do think that's obviously been with the second team line. You know, I think, you know, like you said, he had that little sparkle play against the, you know, in the passing game, in the second preseason game. But I do think he's going to be able to run the ball. He's kind of perfect for their run game with the outside zone stretch stuff that they do. You know, once they get the starting offensive linebacker in there, he's going to have more upside as a runner than he's shown so far.
And I've noticed he's actually using both hands to carry the ball, which was a problem for him in college. He only carried it with his left hand, I believe. One of his hands. I think it was his left hand. But I saw him using the right. Okay, rounding to the finish, the Rams tight ends have actually been the one room that's not been that valuable on the field for fantasy gamers. But Dynasty Twitter certainly loves them some Gerald Everett, and so do I. Can we expect any more involvement from him this season? And could Tyler Higbee rise to any relevance?
All right, so tight end has been kind of the big kind of mystery on this team since McVay's been around. I've been of the opinion, you know, not from a fantasy perspective, but from a football perspective, that they've needed a veteran blocking-based tight end for a couple years, and that's kind of been an issue for them with some of their pass protection, that they, you know, they've had to scheme some stuff rather than having, you know, a good pass-blocking tight end, which I don't think they really have on the roster. But from a fantasy perspective, you know, I think Tyler Higbee's a replacement-level player. He's somebody who, you know, will give you a touchdown here and there, but, you know, I don't really think he's somebody that should be, you know, even in the deepest leagues that I'm in, there's some leagues where he's not really owned. And I think Gerald Everett is just, you know, on the cusp of somebody who really could be a breakthrough-type season-changing fantasy player. I'm not, you know, but again, this I said this last year, and it didn't happen. He's somebody, if you look at his highlights, I think he had like three of the Rams' biggest plays as a rookie, or four of the Rams. They had a NFL Network put out like a top 10 plays of the year from 2017, and Gerald Everett had like three or four of the plays on that reel, and he didn't even do anything in the second half of the year. It was insane. It's like, look at what this guy can do. You know, he just hasn't been able to do it consistently. He's definitely somebody who is certainly the buzz player during OTAs this year. He's probably, you know, really the offensive player that stood out during OTAs. He's somebody who, like I said, has upside in the red zone if they go to him. But, you know, it really, in the regular season, the bread and butter is 11 personnel and the three wideouts, and you're just kind of waiting and waiting and waiting. And in a standard league, you know, those bench spots are pretty valuable, especially early in the year. So, you know, it's really difficult to kind of, one, trust Everett on a week-to-week basis to make him your starting tight end, or two, waste a bench spot on any backup tight end. I would say this, if you're going to waste a bench spot on a second tight end, this is the guy that you want, because they're like, there is the ability for him to pop. He made huge, huge plays in the fourth quarter of the arguably the best game in the NFL last year, that amazing Monday night win over the Chiefs. But then he basically didn't do anything down the stretch and in the playoffs. He didn't catch a ball in the Super Bowl. So, you know, it's certainly a boom and bust sort of situation, a type of really cheap investment that could pay huge dividends. But, you know, it's probably not more than likely that he's going to break out. So I think, you know, Gerald Everett is, you know, one of those kind of, I don't want to call him controversial, but he's certainly kind of one of those typical fantasy football lottery picks that you want to grab at the end of your, you know, the end of your draft, who, you know, if you're in a league where you've got enough bench spots. But, you know, certainly, a great player to talk about, you know, all year from a fantasy perspective. And, you know, there's a couple deep leagues that I'm in where he's a really valuable asset. People really want him and really think that this could be the year that he really breaks out. From a pass catcher, he's right there with the rest of that group. He just hasn't had an opportunity to really do it at a consistent basis. If that happens, there's a chance where he's a top five tight end in fantasy football this year. It's just, wow. Whether or not you believe, you know, that happens. The upside is definitely there with Gerald Everett, one of the tight ends in this league that has, you know, one of the few tight ends that has top five upside for sure.
Well, I certainly love that. And you mentioned the Chiefs-Rams game. I was there, so yeah, I can...
What a day.
It was incredible. Yeah. But before the game, it would have been pretty bold to say both teams would score in the 50s, but it happened. So I'm going to use that as a transition to my last question. What's your boldest fantasy prediction for the Rams in the 2019 season?
See, the funny thing about this is that, you know, this is an offense where... you know, that you want to have a piece of, you know, you don't want to finish draft day and not have a piece of this offense. The problem is you've got huge investments with the starting running back. You've got huge investments with all three starting receivers. And so from a value perspective, things kind of get difficult. And so this is fun. If I was going to put a bold prediction from a fantasy perspective of the Rams, I would have to give you Jared Goff finishes in the top 7 in fantasy points. Probably not bold enough to go 5, but I think that he's somebody who, like I said, you know, there's all these high price investments that you have to make for the key guys in this offense. What you really want is somebody who, you know, is going to be cheap, but also give you some high upside. And I think that's Goff. I think that's Henderson in a league where he falls to the 8th or lower. And I think that's Everett if you've got bench spots enough to kind of hold and wait and see in the first 3 weeks if he breaks through. So I think that's what I would do. But, Jared Goff has as good a chance to finish, you know, in the top 5, 6, 7 in fantasy football passing points than any of those guys that are going from 7 to 15. So I would love to get him as, like, the last starting quarterback in a 12 or 15 league, and then just, you know, sit back and watch those points roll in.
Joe, you've said it all. Where can people find all your stuff?
Please follow me on VCS Joe Curley on Twitter, Snapchat, Instagram, all your social media outlets, and make sure to subscribe to the Ventura County Star at vcstar.com and USA Today Networks.
Well, I'll be following you all season as I love this team, like I said, and I'm very excited. Hopefully another Super Bowl run is in store. Thank you for joining me.
No problem. I appreciate the time.
Until next year.
Jared Goff, top 7. You are now dialed in.